Radio Prague News.
A Slovak court has overruled earlier rulings saying Andrej Babiš was not an STB agent. Parties are scored over their campaign finances, and Jaromír Jágr makes a winning debut. The Slovak Constitutional Court on Thursday cancelled earlier court decisions ruling that Czech leader and ANO party leader was wrongly referred to as an agent of the former communist secret police, the STB. The court was addressing a complaint from the Nation's Memory Institute surrounding the past of Babiš. The institute, which manages and interprets the archives from the communist era and before, had objected to earlier court rulings that ANO leader Babiš did not collaborate with the STB. Part of the evidence for the former verdicts were based on witness statements from former STB agents. Babiš has repeatedly denied accusations that he collaborated with the STB in spite of archive material suggesting he did. Corruption watchdog and good government promoter Transparency International has released the results of its monitoring of Czech political parties' openness about their funding and spending ahead of upcoming parliamentary elections. Director David Ondráčka said the results broadly showed parties such as the Greens and Pirates as being the most open. Traditional parties such as the Social Democrats and Civic Democrats occupied a mid-ranking. The Realist Party and SPO Party linked to President Miloš Zeman, as well as the Freedom Party, scored worst. Elections to the lower house of parliament are due to take place on October the 20th and 21st. The Czech upper house, the Senate, has condemned head of state Miloš Zeman's comments to the Council of Europe Assembly. It said his words appeared to legitimise the Russian annexation of Crimea. The final resolution said that Zeman should respect the lines of Czech foreign policy, a tougher resolution that the president had damaged the reputation of the Czech Republic was not adopted. Zeman said that the annexation was now a fait accompli and suggested that Russia might compensate Ukraine through deliveries of natural gas or oil. Zeman's spokesman later commented that the president's comments this week were not meant to legitimise the annexation, but were a considered and realistic evaluation of the current situation. And a comparison of 21 foodstuffs produced in 5 countries, including the Czech Republic, has showed differences in most of them. The examination of the contents of food sold in Germany, Austria, Czech Republic, Slovakia and Hungary was carried out by a Prague university, with the results released on Thursday. It found only 7 of the products were totally the same. There were small variations for 3, and for 11 products, the variations were considerable. In most cases, the quality of food offered in Germany was superior. And finally, veteran ice hockey star Jaromír Jágr won his first game in the colours of the Calgary Flames. His compatriot Michal Frolik notched up 1 goal and 1 assist for Calgary in a 4-3 overtime victory at Los Angeles. At 45, Jágr is the oldest active player in the NHL. He's the second most productive player in the league's history. Wednesday's game was his first appearance for his new club. And the weather on Friday should be cloudy with sunny intervals across most of the country. Top daytime temperatures will range between 15 and 19 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston. That was the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Jan Velinger, your host for today. Here are the stories we are featuring for you. Concrete barriers, which are rather unsightly at historic sites like the Old Town Square, are a necessary eyesore for now. Then we'll be looking at an exhibition about the famous Tugendhat Villa by Mies van der Rohe. It's currently on display in the City of Prague Museum. And in the second part of our program, meet Vojtěch Merunka. He's part of a language-creating team behind the language called Interslavic. That's all ahead. Recently, concrete barriers were added around parts of the Old Town Square in Prague to prevent or block vehicles which could potentially be used in a terrorist attack. There's no question about the prudence of the move, of course, but few would call the barriers attractive. The Prague Institute of Planning and Development is one of the bureaus looking for a better long-term solution. A little earlier, I spoke to the Institute's Katarzyna Glatznerova about the debate now underway.
The security of the citizens is now a priority, of course, and we we can't underestimate it. But we have solutions or we have other ideas how the barriers would maybe look more elegant and would not really invade the public space in such a way as it does now.
What's wrong with the barriers that are up at the moment? They appear temporary, certainly.
Yes, the solution is now temporary. And the main problem is, I think, that they block the pedestrians, the people that walk around, have to go around. And overall, it doesn't really look good on such places that are so important, such as Staroměstské náměstí.
There are other sites which are under consideration for barriers, so I suppose a better long-term solution there is also needed for that reason.
Definitely, definitely. There are some potential sites, for example, as Charles Bridge or the Wenceslas Square, that are also potentially looking like there will be barriers, but definitely we think that a better long-term solution would be good.
What are some good examples that you are looking at? Because obviously you can have very effective kinds of barriers from different materials, but which are design terms, aesthetically pleasing or unobtrusive at the same time.
So we have the example from London, King's Cross, where there are silver bars that are buried deep underground. And it is an elegant solution that does not block the way for the pedestrians as much, and it also doesn't really disturb the public space. Then, for example, we have an example of the concrete benches and concrete flower pots, which stop any cars from going into the space, but also look good and can be used. And, for example, there are also the mechanical bars that are hidden underground, and if there is, for example, some market, they will go up.
And because it's still at the level of debate or discussion, from what you're saying, many of these solutions are probably more long-term when it comes to planning as well. I imagine that a tender would be required for different proposals to be submitted before a winner would be announced. Until then, basically, we're going to have these concrete barriers. Something has to be there.
Probably, yes, because really, as I said before, the priority is now the security of the citizens, and it cannot really be underestimated. So rather than not putting anything there and risking people's lives just because we want it to look nice, is not a good solution. So the priority now is really the security.
And that was Kateřina Glasnerová of Prague's Institute of Planning and Development about the temporary concrete barriers that are up at places like Old Town Square and about more long-term barriers which could replace them, but to be more aesthetically appealing. Now, an exhibition about the famous Tugendhat Villa by Mies van der Rohe is currently on display at the City of Prague Museum. The traveling exhibition on the history of the UNESCO landmark was prepared by the Villa Tugendhat's Study and Documentation Center and has already made 25 stops around the world, among them the Royal Institute of British Architects in London or the Bohemian National Hall in Manhattan. Ruth Frankova has the story.
The Tugendhat Villa, designed by famous architect Mies van der Rohe, was completed in 1930 and is the only example of modern Czech architecture on the UNESCO World Heritage List, where it was included in 2001. According to Iveta Černá, the head of the Villa Tugendhat Study and Documentation Centre, it is considered one of the masterpieces of modernism and is comparable to the likes of Villa Savoie by Le Corbusier or Falling Water by Frank Lloyd Wright.
The house is unique because some aspects, one of the most important is the space. Because in the case of Villa Tugendhat, we are talking about so-called flowing space. Thanks to the skeleton construction from Berlin Steel, Mies van der Rohe was, for instance, able to create the most important room, its living room, which has 230 square meters. The room is facing the Brno City historical horizont. And two facades are completely glazed from the floor till ceiling. And if I'm talking about the technical equipment, but also the main space is fully air-conditioned. It was in 1930 really unique. And finally, the house was protected by photocell. It was unique in that time also.
The Tugendhats, who commissioned the villa, only lived there for 8 years. In 1938, when German troops occupied the Czech borders, they were forced to flee the country because of their Jewish origin. The villa was taken over by the Gestapo and confiscated by the Czechoslovak state in 1945. The exhibition, which is on display in Villa Miller, which is part of the City of Prague Museum, presents dozens of large-scale photos with accompanying text documenting the history of the villa from its inception to the present day. It is complemented by an illuminated model of the building. The exhibition was put together by the Villa Tugendhat Study and Documentation Center in 2012 and has since traveled all around the world. Iveta Černá mentioned at least some of its stops.
We were asked for this exhibition by Faculty of Architecture, designed by excellent architects, holders of Pritzker Prize, Alvaro Siza and Eduardo Souto de Moura. And maybe finally I have to say that the exhibition was presented even in two houses designed by Mies, and it was in Stuttgart, in Weißenhofsiedlung, in Mies van der Rohe Gallery, and finally in Weimar, in a first school of Bauhaus, designed by Walter Gropius. Mies van der Rohe was the last director of the Bauhaus, so there is also very strong connection.
The exhibition on Villa Tugendhat in Prague's Villa Miller runs until the 28th of January.
That was Ruth Frankova, and an exhibition very well worth seeing. So it sounds like we should get down there to check that out. Quick reminder, this is the International Service of Czech Radio. If you want to look us up on the internet for more stories, features, and all kinds of good stuff, the address to visit is radio.cz. And if you want to comment or you have any questions for us, english@radio.cz is the address to write to. And of course, last but not least, Radio Prague is on Facebook and on Twitter. And now it's time for today's main feature. Vojtěch Merunka, an associate professor who teaches at the Czech University of Life Sciences and also the Czech Technical University in Prague, is one of a team of creators behind InterSlavic, a language designed to make communication possible for anyone with Slav roots. Speak Czech, but not any Russian or Bulgarian or Polish. InterSlavic, he says, is the alternative. And at a conference in June, he and fellow team members put the language to the test. In our interview, I began by asking Mr. Merunka why InterSlavic could serve as an alternative to simply communicating in English.
This is a problem with English. In order to communicate within Europe, many people must learn English, but they do not speak sufficiently well. We have got one good alternative to English language, and this is receptive multilingualism. What is this? This is popular in Scandinavia, because Danish people, Swedish people, Norwegian can speak each other in their own languages, but they understand each other. Similar situation was in Czechoslovakia. Typical situation was that a Czech spoke Czech, Slovak spoke Slovak, but they understand each other. And also in former Yugoslavia, it was also almost similar situation. So I was inspired by one research of the University of Groningen in Netherlands, because this group was exploring some European Union project, which was focused to receptive ability to understand languages within Europe, mutual understandability of different languages within Europe. And I tried to extend this idea to the whole Slavic family. Because, of course, I understand that current Slavic languages are similar, but are not similar enough to automatically understand each other. But in the 9th century, there was one very good attempt to create a universal language. It was Old Slavonic language by Cyril and Methodius from Salonika. It was a language also for bringing Christianity to Great Moravia Empire. And also I know about a project of Sanskrit. Mm-hmm. Sanskrit is an artificial language, artificially made language, but made from natural local languages in India. So this two very successful projects in history, Sanskrit and Old Slavonic, inspired me to try to make something like modernization, moving old Slavonic language forward. I tried to make something like a game or on an experiment. How would old Slavonic language look when this language will evolve during the same time as national Slavic languages?
Mm-hmm. So, well, let me ask you first simply about the kind of, I guess, commonalities between the different Slavic languages. I mean, there are words, I guess, whether you're speaking Russian, Polish, Czech, Slovak, Serbo-Croatian, there are words which are already similar, I guess, but there are also words which are not.
Yeah. I using Facebook, because now we are living in the computer age. Yeah. Using Facebook and using email and other internet facilities, I contacted a small group in Givard, which is also doing or interesting in similar or the same subject. And I recognized that in the history there was maybe more than 50 attempts to create a universal Slavic language. In the last three centuries, it was many, many projects.
Why do you think they failed? Was it too monumental a task?
All these projects are almost similar in vocabulary. Because to create vocabulary, to create common Slavic vocabulary is not so hard. Basic words are almost similar in all Slavic languages, and some additional words you can derive. So making vocabulary or dictionary is almost easy.
Mm-hmm.
But they failed in two things. First reason was area of use. Because they tried to create a high level, some kind of a high level language for the art, for the belletry, for the poetry, for theater, etc. This is absolutely wrong, because it will be always domain of national languages, because each national language has its own spirit, its own nature, its own culture, etc. Okay. And second, they omitted grammar. They focused only on vocabulary.
And the grammar is the rubby. That is the main.
I think that the grammar is the main problem in building a common inter-Slavic language. Particular independent words, they can understand. Almost 80% of words are quite similar,
mm-hmm,
or very near, but the whole context of the sentence is somewhere else. This is the problem. Syntax of sentences, morphology, grammar, this is the problem. Yeah, but big surprise for me that inter-Slavic language is still understandable. This language is understandable not only on the basic level, like food, my friend, what is your name, but this language is also on the same level, is understandable. If you speak about some area of science, if you speak about some profession. One example, 1 month ago, we organized a conference on inter-Slavic language.
Yes.
There was 64 people from 12 different countries. And we discussed topics on history, some topics on pedagogy, education, on the professional level. But we had only one translator, one translation into inter-Slavic.
Are you saying then that the language is already at such a stage that there's enough of a common vocabulary as well as a fixed grammatical structure?
I think that we are very close to the one form of an inter-Slavic language. We creators, because we are a group of about seven people who can actively speak.
Okay.
Seven people can speak. But our group on Facebook is very big, hundreds. Total number of friends on Facebook is more than 1,000.
This could be very useful between, you know, in this part of the world, in Central and Eastern Europe, people
yes,
were to start actively communicating in this way. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
I want to come back to something that you said at the beginning, which was you mentioned that there were many attempts in the past. A lot of these attempts at a Pan-Slavic language were, I guess, a creation of their times when you had a national rebirth. So I wanted to ask you, is that also, you know, part and parcel of this project, or is your project separated from that? And the reason I ask is because obviously Pan-Slavism may not get traction with certain segments, people who, you know, don't really feel the Slavic brotherly love, if I put it into those terms, you know,
because of
the shared history and past wrongs, fault lines. I mean, Russian historic ties with Serbia, for example,
and
Poland. So I wanted to ask you if your project is separate from that kind of ideology or dream.
Absolutely, absolutely separated. Because Pan-Slavism, we are not Pan-Slavists. We are inter-Slavists or interlinguists or something like that. Because we have very close relations also to community of Latin languages. And they have a similar project to as an inter-Latin language. So it is not limited to Slavic languages. And also we are members of the world community of language creators, constructors of languages. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So back to Pan-Slavism. I understand it well, because Pan-Slavism is a product of the 19th century of national revival, and it was a very different situation from our situation we have now, because in the 19th century only Russia was an independent Slavic state, and the others were under some dominance of another nations. For example, we in Austro-Hungarian Empire. But very important is one information. In the middle of 19th century, Czech nation did not have its own state, of course, but lived in better condition than Russian nation, because in the late Austrian Empire, late 19th century, it was almost democracy. But in the Russian Empire, it was absolutely different. And there was also some problems which started in the 60s of 19th century, because some Pan-Slavists, Czech Pan-Slavists, for example, František Palacký or Karel Havlíček Borovský, a writer, journalist, recognized some problem between Russia, because from Russian perspective, Pan-Slavism was always only about extending Russian Empire,
Russian influence,
Europe. Yeah, and Russia Slavic unity was expected only as a Slavic unity under Russian dominance and also political governance, nothing else. But we, Slavs, small nations within Central Europe, we tried to keep democracy but have our own state. Very, very different goal.
Final question, just briefly. I read that you strongly dislike any kind of comparisons between the Inter-Slavic language and Esperanto.
Because journalists like shorthand. And they say, oh Merunka developed Slavic Esperanto. Okay, but it is very big difference between Esperanto and our languages. Not mine personally, but our, because we are a group. Yeah.
Yes.
Because if you want to understand Esperanto, you need to learn Esperanto. Esperanto has been designed for easy learning. But if I speak to you in Esperanto and you did not learn Esperanto, no understand.
Yeah, nothing in the world will help
you. Our language is absolutely different, because if I speak in our inter-Slavic language to anybody who has Slavic origin, not only Czech, but also Russian, Bulgarian, Serb, Croatian, Pole, etc., all languages, all nations, they understand.
And that was Wojciech Merunka, one of the team members of a team creating the language Inter-Slavic, about the benefits of kind of a pan-Slavic language, which was a dream of the past and could be more of a reality in the future. We're just about out of time. If you want to comment, once again, english@radio.cz is the address to write to. Otherwise, that's it from us. I'm Jan Wellinger. Thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.